This is All Things Psychic, a weekly podcast with two psychic mediums where we answer your questions and share our experiences about all things psychic. Send your questions to us at allthingspsychicpodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram at allthingspsychicofficial.
Yay!
Hello.
Hi. Can you guys hear me okay?
Oh, yes.
Okay. We're on. Oh my god.
All right. We got it.
I'm so excited. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of All Things Psychic. We are here with Lyris. Lyris, how do you pronounce your last name?
Knight.
Night. Oh. Well, that's that is solid. Yes.
Not nearly as complicated as the first name.
Yeah. Exactly. And you are a paranormal investigator.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome.
In Portland, Oregon.
What was that?
You're in Portland, Oregon.
Yes, I am.
And do you travel to other places as well?
Oh, I love to travel. Yes, I'm not beyond traveling. I think it mostly depends on what my schedule permits.
Okay.
But I'm not beyond a healthy traveling trip.
Awesome. Well, I'm curious about, so how did you get started in this work?
Oh, well, that's a tale. I think primarily what pulled me into the field was history. You know, I'm a history buff. I enjoy historical locations. I enjoy history in general. And when I was, younger, I really enjoyed researching and learning about darker locations that have darker histories. And that just really kind of opened the door for paranormal investigating, because when you go into locations, almost everything has a history, especially depending on where you're investigating. And part of your investigation is knowing the history. So the two for me really just went hand in hand. And I think that my love of history and my love of occultism and metaphysics is what kind of just blended those things together.
That is awesome. Have you been to the White Eagle here in Portland?
I have not. My area of focus on Portland has mainly been the Shanghai tunnels. It's really drawn in my attention, and so that's kind of been my area of focus. But I've been to places like Astoria, I've been down to Crater Lake, so I've been to a couple smaller locations. But keep in mind I also have not been in Oregon for too terribly long.
Okay. We seem to have a lot of history here that's dark.
It's interesting. It definitely, as I've been diving into it more, has been pulling me in. So, and it's a very different history than what I'm used to. I'm used to East Coast history around the Washington, D.C. area. And so it's very different history as well.
Wow. So, who is your typical client?
Well, I think that if my team and I aren't, going after a specific location where it's like, hey, did you hear about this building or this area, and somebody's coming to me, I really think it's really just your average person. Somebody's moved into a new house and it's causing them some discomfort. Somebody's had some activity stir up in their house. They don't know what to do with it. But I wouldn't say that there's any specific person where when I show up at their house or talk to them over the phone, I go, oh yeah, that's typical. You kind of get all different types of people.
Oh, well. And so do you ever work with mediums? Have them come in and see just what validate or see what they're picking up on?
Yeah. So we have two sensitives on our team, and it's definitely something that I believe helps balance our team out. We have myself and another gentleman, and he's kind of our tech guy, and him and I do more of the technical data approach, as well as my own personal blendings and educations in occultism and New Age studies. And then we have our two sensitives as well, and they do a really, really fantastic job. And they like to, you know, we like to have them point us in a direction. You know, if they walk into a room and say, I'm feeling this, I'm getting this, you know, we like to break out the equipment and start trying to capture what is happening. And we've had success with that. And so I think it's a wonderful contribution to a team. I mean, absolutely.
I love that.
That's really cool.
I love that. What was your, like, scariest? Was there one that really scared you?
Oh.
One of your investigations?
I
did get spooked?
Yeah, did you get scared?
Well, that's a fair question. I wouldn't say that there's ever been an investigation where I was, like, frightened, but there's been investigations where I've been hesitant, where, and I think that the ones that get me are kind of the ones that get into my head a little bit when I do my historical research. And so there was a location in Frederick, Maryland area that I had gone to with a couple of old friends. And when I went into the research, it turns out it was some old, like, smithing mine. And what they would do is they had this giant furnace. They would melt things down into metal to be used for, you know, different types of construction. And it had just a really bleak history of people dying, of people, you know, like, having violent experiences there. And there was just something about it that rattled me. And so when our team got there to, you know, dive in and start doing some work, we just got spooked real easy. There was a bird, of course, in the woods. You know, you're in the woods, and so there's a bird, and it spooked us, and we all yelled about it, and that was funny. But I wouldn't say there's been a moment where I've been like, you know what, we need to leave. At least not yet. Okay. Knock on wood.
Yeah.
Now, well, I will say too, there's been times where we have collectively agreed as a group to not go back to a place, though. I will say that too.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you ever done an abandoned, like, a state hospital?
Well, that can be kind of a tricky question, because a lot of those places have trespassing laws applied to them. So, when you do look at locations like that, you need to be mindful about, you know, the morality and the ethics behind what it is that you're doing. I have had the opportunity to go into a couple different facilities, and through talking with historians there, or just, you know, making some network connections, had the ability to pull out some equipment for a very short period of time. But I don't think I would go as far as saying it's an investigation.
Right. Mm-hmm. I love that. You know, the part about really researching the history, I feel that the spirits in the space know that. They know that you are doing your due diligence to really get the truth of the matter. And I feel like they respond well to that.
Yeah, I can certainly agree with that. We've had some really amazing results by doing some deep research at, like, the libraries or something similar. Even something as minute as pulling up a newspaper article where you get the name of a family that lived there at one point. That kind of stuff can really blow something out of the water. If you have somebody's name and you try to capture an EVP, then you get a direct response to that. You're connecting with a person, all because you were able to dig up some information that you wouldn't have had otherwise.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Is there one tool that you rely on the most?
Well, I am a big fan of my Melmeter. It has a REM pod in it. It has a temperature gauge in it, and it also has an EMF detector. So that's my Melmeter. It's my baby of my equipment. I love it. But
yeah, and it probably knows you, you know, like, when you work with a piece of equipment well enough, I could imagine, like, it just becomes your favorite thing.
Yeah, well, and you get to know your equipment more, you get to understand what causes reactions. And that's so important, because for people that aren't familiar with equipment, you know, for example, I've had somebody hand me a piece of equipment that they weren't really technologically familiar with. But owned, and it would go off, and you're able to say, okay, well, that, you know, that's what this is. And, you know, as opposed to a piece of equipment that you're really, really familiar with, and it does go off, you say, no, this is not why this would happen. That's not why that would happen. So really, at that point, you start narrowing down. It's paranormal. It's out of the normal. And so that's nice to know your equipment intimately enough to make those quick decisions.
Yeah. I like that. I mean, that feels like such a respectful approach to investigate. Mm-hmm. It's not just like, oh, I just want to be, you know, I want to be scared and I want to see a ghost.
No,
and, you know?
No, not at all.
It's almost like starting with, you know, maybe there's nothing here. Let's rule out everything that could be affecting this. Is there a window open? Or, you know, especially with temperature shifts, do you find that to be true? Like a temperature shift is, I always feel like that's such a strong message coming through as far as like when energy is trying to reveal itself.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Debunking is kind of always our first step. You know, what do we know is going on? What are the experiences being had? And what could, you know, cause an apparent or suspected anomaly? And then working your way backwards from there. But I think that in regards to like what I commonly experience as far as debunking is actually EMF fields from exposed wiring. Or even wiring out front of somebody's house. I had an investigation one time where it turns out the couple of the house were sleeping next to an exposed EMF wire that was giving off an EMF range of in high 80s, which is not healthy. It can cause hallucinations. It can cause auditory hallucinations. And a lot of the discomfort they were experiencing was in their bed. And it turns out they just had an exposed wire that they knew nothing about.
Oh my God, that's crazy. That blows my mind. That's really interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you were able to pick that up from your EMF reader?
That was on the trusty Mel meter.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So how do you navigate the information that you receive? I mean, do you then take it back to like a studio and you're looking at for voice phenomenon or... like, how do you navigate all your information?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a lot of parts to it. So excuse my momentary rambling on it. I think it depends on what information we're talking about and then how it is, the length of the investigation we've done. So for example, if I am doing a preliminary research and I have some historical questions, I'm going to direct those questions to my historical buddies. Or I'm actually going to go to where I need to go for the historical research. So for example, with the Shanghai tunnels, one of the first things I did was actually go on a tour down there and try to talk to some of the tour guides and get their personal experience and in education as well. Mm-hmm. Then if something is of the paranormal nature, then I'm going to go to those groups of friends or metaphysics or occult, then that's the direction I'm heading in. And once we get all this evidence, it really, that's where the brunt of the teamwork starts to come in as well too, because if you have done a 5-hour investigation and you have 4 recorders, you're going through hours and hours of audio and you've got to trust each other to go through that audio adequately. Otherwise you're going to be going, you know what? I don't think that you really sat and listened to everything, you know, with the noise canceling headphones. And I think I need to go back through it. And, you know, you're talking, that can take weeks sometimes.
Wow.
Oh my gosh. That's so different than like how I receive information.
I'm sure yours is much more direct.
I'm going to check my EMF wires outside though.
I have a question. If you're doing an investigation, maybe someone has something in their house and they want your help, and then you do an entire investigation and hear a message, you know, like something specific. Do you ever get anything like from a spirit, or like what's your obligation? Do you have to tell them what's going on, or
so you broke up there for just a second, so I just want to make sure I understand. So if I receive any type of information during an investigation, are you asking if that's something I then relay to the client or to my...
So I
do try to be very transparent with my clients. There's very, very rarely, actually, if ever, that I've experienced a reason to withhold something that we've discovered. You know, the people that reach out for help, they want answers. That's what they're here for. And typically, no matter what they are, people are receptive to them. Now, I've absolutely had, you know, quite a few circumstances where people were wanting it to be something specific. And it just, from what I could gather, it's not saying it's their same experience. It's just what spirit decided to be around our equipment and our investigation that day is not what they were anticipating. Yeah, there will be moments though where we will catch a very prevalent EVP, or we'll have yes, no answers to some of our equipment that really just, you know, blows the door right off the hinges. And, you know, if we take a break, we'll go and talk to the client and say, you know, this is what we found, just so you know.
Yeah.
Wow.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because often, so is it usually you receive maybe like you can put a sentence together that a message that came through, or is it usually a name?
So as far as like EVPs go, getting that class A, that clear EVP recording that's multiple syllables, that's not something that I've experienced often. And you know, if you get that, that's like you're going and throwing a party, you know, that's just always remarkable. But more often than not, what I tend to have the most success with is going to be that EMF reader in the REM pod, or it's going to be small blips on the EMF recorder. And so, you know, those types are the EVP recorders. So those types of things are where you get the most success. But as far as getting these clear sentences that you can just decipher, you know exactly what spirit is saying, those are going to be a little more rare.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of people don't understand how challenging it is for the other side to be able to, like, put a sentence together.
Yeah.
I mean, it takes a lot of energy. It takes less. And correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I've experienced, like, it takes less energy to, you know, have an energy field around a REM pod than it does, you know, actually putting the words together.
I think that's something you guys would probably be able to answer a little better than me, as far as like how much energy a spirit has to expend to communicate. That's not something I've been able to solidly put, you know, a name or face to. You know, if you're thinking you have a very charged atmosphere, you know, as far as like science goes, where, you know, let's say you have those exposed wires and that's giving off some type of electrical current in the air, or there's a storm outside, or it just seems like all of the pieces are in play to get a really great night of evidence capturing, and then it just doesn't happen. So, you know, I really couldn't say how much energy it takes for them to expend. And, you know, I've also caught EVPs that were really, really clear, and it didn't even sound like spirit was talking to me. It sounded like it was talking to another spirit. So it's hard to say.
I wonder what they're gossiping about. So how has your own intuition grown with the work that you've done?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say that I'm much more calm during my investigations. You know, when you first start going into this stuff, it's easy to start getting overwhelmed, or, you know, start to kind of lose your spot in the investigation, you know, your track, what you're doing, who you're looking for, what kind of evidence that you're trying to find. And as you hone your blade a little more, you start to be able to really not have issues with those things, to focus easier, to communicate a little better, and to also know what to look for. You know, it's not like talking to somebody in a room. You've got to listen. You've got to know what you're trying to feel. And as you progress in your investigations and you gain some more experience, you start to understand, well, this is unusual. This shouldn't be happening. I need to start paying attention to this area a little more. So overall, just a sharpening of those senses and that intuition when you're going into the field repetitively.
Yes. So do you ground or meditate before you go into an investigation?
Before and after.
Mm-hmm. Before and after. So you like close it out.
Yeah. And it's just, when you immerse yourself into an environment like that, it's very easy to become ungrounded, right? I mean, you're communicating with a spirit, you know, it's spirit. And when you're in that for hours at a time and you're kind of mentally living in the history of this area and the experiences that these people would have had and the experiences that the spirit that's there would have had and how that's connecting to modern day and what you're doing, it's easy to really get enveloped in that. And so grounding afterwards, it just really ensures that, you know, you're back in that space, you're back in that mundane space, you're grounded with yourself, and you're taking care of yourself, you know, energetically and spiritually when you're coming in and out of those types of places.
Yeah, something that we talk that's about a lot. Yeah, so you don't bring, you know, we found that like people that get really excited about this work, you know, they just want to jump in there and be in that space. And, you know, it leaves people at risk for hitchhikers, you know, energetic hitchhikers to, you know, attach to them if they're not doing that practice of grounding both before and after.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, sometimes that type of situation is not nearly as evident as people would think it is. But I will say too, knock on wood, it's not a common occurrence either, at least from my personal experience. It's not something, you know, that I necessarily worry about, but then again, I am minding my P's and Q's as I go through my work.
Yeah.
That's awesome. It's really good to hear. It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's validating.
I know. I'm really careful about that too. You know, if we read someone or when we get together, we ask permission and then we close out when we're done.
Yeah. And I mean, as you should, you know, you don't want to just leave yourself. Well, some people, and you know, this is a thing, right? There's different types of people in every situation. Some people, the way they do their practice, they leave themselves open. Other people, you know, very rarely open themselves. So I think it depends on the person, but I know for me personally, and what I always advise is just mindfulness when you are going into investigating or going into paranormal work is be mindful of you, be mindful of your health, be mindful of the health of your team, be mindful of the health of the client you're working with, and really just make sure that you're you know, crossing your T's and dotting your I's so that at the end of it, you can continue enjoying what you do.
I love your ethics around that.
That's really great. That's so excellent to hear from you because we follow ethics and morals, and I think it's very important to learn,
especially for the long haul. Is there any protection that you bring with you? Do you have like something that you wear as far as like an amulet, or do you carry a crystal with you? Is there something like a type of protection that you take into your investigation?
Well, I think it depends on kind of what I'm expecting or anticipating. If I'm thinking that it's going to be kind of a long haul or a rough ride, I'll bring a couple of different tools with me that not only help me, but will also help my team as well too. That's one of the things I try to bring to my team is the ability to create a you know, safe environment if things do start getting a little rocky for everybody. But overall, if I'm just going through and doing something that's, you know, a little more mundane, not necessarily as exciting, then some black tourmaline always does me really well. Tiger's eye always does me really well. So basic stones, but depending on the necessity, I can escalate from there.
Awesome. Wow. That's awesome. So when we're given the free and clear with the pandemic, is that when you'll be able to open up again and start more investigations?
Yeah. So one of the things, you know, I'm always open to is emails, contact, communication. I don't ever mind if anybody reaches out to me with questions or concerns that they have. I'm always happy to answer, awesome. You know, anything that I can, or direct you to somebody else that may be able to if I can't. But once the pandemic is over, I do absolutely anticipate going back on physical field investigations, as well as continuing my classes that I occasionally teach at Invoke in Portland, at the shop that Miss Christie owns. And so that's something I'm really excited to go back in and do as well, too. I miss holding those little classes.
That's awesome. That's a question. So Do you mind sharing with everyone where people can find you or follow you or contact you?
Yeah, so the best way to contact me that it gets to me most directly is my email. And I don't know if you guys put it up, so I'll just go ahead and, you know, say it. It's my first name, Lyrus, Lyrus, Knight, Knight, @gmail.com. And I always welcome emails. It might take me a little bit to get back to you, especially if you have a question that requires some research on my part. But I'm typically pretty good about responding, and I'm always happy to, you know, provide my services.
We found that to be true.
Yes,
you
did.
This is so awesome. I want to go on a cemetery tour with you. And we went to the Lone Fir Cemetery.
Yeah.
Here in Portland, that has a lot of historic Portland buried there, and that was pretty awesome.
Now, that's if I recall correctly, that's in Southeast. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Uh-huh. So I'm familiar with it, but I've not been there yet.
Oh, it's huge, Lyrus. Like 20,000 people are buried there, and it's enormous, and it's still like active, like as far as people are still being buried there.
And some people back in the day who couldn't be buried there, they were just thrown over the fence at night and their friends buried them there.
I was just, you know, I was just wondering to myself, like, I wonder what like the history there is, right? Of course, it's where I'm going. So I wonder what the history is there, what the land was used for. Well, it seems like people were just kind of chucking their bodies over it. Oh, geez.
Yeah. Yes. So you can look up just
Friends of Lone Fir Cemetery.
Yep, Friends of Lone Fir Cemetery. And there's so all history. Sorts of history, and they break it down to like plots and where you can find specific people. And there's some of their stories. A lot of women suffragettes are there. It's just really awesome. It feels like it's just a smattering of Portland.
Oh, well, that's excellent. Thank you. That's okay. I'm gonna look into it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, all right. Well, that's all we have today. Oh my gosh, Lyrus, this was great.
Thank you so much for the invitation and for having me on here. Hopefully, you know, this is all helpful to you guys and people enjoy hearing about it.
Oh, absolutely. And let us know if you ever need any support from our end.
Yes, and your contact info out there. And
Awesome. Yeah, that's great. Thanks, guys, all so right. much. And if there's anything else I can do for you, or you just want to say hi, feel free to reach out to me.
All right, Lyrus. Thank you so much. Have a
you guys
great
too.
Rest
Have a good
evening.
One now.
Yeah.
Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye.